You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk. UK.
Well, it's been predicted, actually, for around about 20 years that there may be migrant crises going on, particularly with the problems that there have been in the Middle East and Africa. And also, of course, with difficulty for people finding work and a stable country to live in. Libya is the obvious example of somewhere which was relatively stable and now is effectively run by warlords. And the effect of this, of course, is something that's been going on over the last couple of months, really through July and August, highlighted in Calais. And I'm joined by John Dantzig now. Hi, John. Welcome to Dialect.
Good evening.
John, tell us a bit about yourself as a journalist. Where have you worked in the past?
Well, I've had quite a varied background as both an investigative and campaigning journalist. I used to be a broadcaster and investigative reporter with Roger Cook at the BBC. I've worked on United Nations projects. In my early 20s, I went to Africa and imported with some friends 3 tons of their coffee. And that was the start of the idea for a fair trade coffee in this country. So you can see that I've used my journalism to campaign for what I've felt were good causes.
Now, not all journalists do that, do they? What is it that drives you to do the campaigning style of journalism?
Well, I guess because I've always tried to have humanitarian values, not wanting to be self-righteous about it. But people have said to me sometimes, John, you can't change the world. And I've said, maybe, but I'll have a good try. I think that you get to a stage where you ask journalism for what, and whether you're just going to report what's there or whether you're going to actually do something that can help maybe change the world for the better if you can.
Before we go on to talk more about the migrant crisis, give us your thoughts about the sorts of pressures that there are on journalists working in Reuters, places like that, the more in the mainstream staff journalists, not necessarily to report both sides of a story.
I think there probably is a pressure under professional journalism and journalists to report. It depends rather what newspapers they are reporting for. I've written recently about some inaccurate reports, for instance, by the Daily Mail, who claimed that hundreds of migrants from Calais were being put up in hotels. Actually, it was 100, and they were all accepted as asylum seekers. So their misinformation actually just alarmed people. They also claimed in the last couple of weeks that 70% of the migrants and refugees in Calais were making it through to Britain. And they got that information, they said, from the chief constable of Kent. But actually, the chief constable of Kent didn't say that. What he actually said was that within 4 months, the migrants in Calais disperse, 70% of them go elsewhere, and we don't know where they go. We don't know whether some of them come to Britain or they go elsewhere in France or try and seek asylum in another country. So that sort of misreporting does inflame people's views about this, and it's not helpful. I think it leads to a society which could easily end up having a sort of hatred for foreigners generally and refugees and asylum seekers in particular.
Do you think any politicians are also in danger of drumming up this xenophobia?
I'm afraid so. I think that the Prime Minister, who's talked about swarms, and I think Mr. Hammond, who said that European standard of living could be jeopardised by the number of migrants and refugees coming to Europe, has actually not helped the situation, and really are not factually correct when you think that okay, it's a large number, 200,000 migrants who have come across to Europe is minuscule compared to the 700 million or so population of Europe. And if they all came and we accepted them, which we won't, obviously, it would really not make a lot of difference if they were dispersed across Europe. But I think that that sort of language actually can be very dangerous to society when, after all, the United Nations has described this as the worst refugee crisis since the Second World War. I believe the worst crisis on record. And our response to that, obviously, is very critical. We are part of a planet that is facing a crisis. And how we help contribute to relieve or exacerbate that crisis will obviously be very important.
Some have compared the scale of the movement of migrants to the hundreds of thousands of people that were shipped across the Atlantic to colonise the United States. Obviously, the situation is very different, and some people were a little bit more, shall we say, voluntary going across the Atlantic. But what is it that causes these giant migrant crises, this one specifically?
Well, there's no doubt that this crisis has been brought about by war and violence and terrorism. And those who say that most of these people are economic migrants are really doing a disservice both to the truth and also to the people who are risking their lives, people and children risking their lives to escape horrible danger and violence and the threat of violence in some of the most war-torn countries in the world. I mean, 62% of those who reached Europe by boat this year were from Syria, Eritrea, and Afghanistan, according to the United Nations, a source that I mostly do trust. And these are the countries that are torn apart by war and dictatorial oppression and religious extremism. And their citizens, when they arrive from those countries, are almost always accepted as asylum seekers with a right to refuge in Europe. We should not be demeaning these people by describing them in the wrong way.
What would you say to those, John, that maybe know somebody or themselves have been made redundant and they can see that people who are prepared to take much less pay, worse conditions, are taking jobs in Britain?
Well, I'm afraid you've fallen into the trap there of comparing two different types of migrants. Asylum seekers, I suppose, are a category of migrant. But asylum seekers are not generally allowed to work in this country. They only get the minuscule amount of benefits. They're not entitled to normal benefits. They get around £36 a week to subsist on. And they're mostly poverty stricken. And the small numbers, I mean, for instance, the few thousand in Cali are only about between 1 and 2% of the total number of migrants and refugees who've sought refuge in Europe. So it's just, by comparison, a small number have gone to Calais. And if we took them all in, and I'm not suggesting we should take them all in, but if we took them all in, it wouldn't make any difference to our standard of living. But there's another thing here as well. It's rather sad that poorer people and unemployed people in this country should regard asylum seekers and refugees as a threat to them. We shouldn't be falling into the trap that sometimes politicians enable us to do of being divided and ruled. You know, both sets of people need support. We shouldn't say either or. If someone goes into hospital or people go into hospital, we don't say, oh, they're being looked after by the NHS, so people who are unemployed will get less. We shouldn't be thinking that way. We are one of the richest countries in the world, and Europe is the richest continent in the world. And if we can't help, then heaven help the planet.
What about big companies, big corporations? Don't they actually stand to gain by having a nice, plentiful supply of cheap labour coming into Britain?
Well, again, you're talking about people working, and asylum seekers generally are not allowed to work. But generally, if you're talking about migrants generally, then, you know, modern societies, modern countries have succeeded by migration. We generally are richer by having people come here from other countries. And British people have also benefited from going abroad. If you look at, for instance, European EU migration, which is castigated in the media and by some of our politicians, there are about the same number of British people who have moved to other parts of Europe as European citizens who've come to live and work in Great Britain. So if all Britons in the rest of Europe came home and the Europeans from the other parts of Europe living here went home, the population of this country would be about the same as it is now. You don't often see that in our media, but these are the sorts of facts that I hope can come out, and people can then maybe adjust their opinions accordingly.
Is there any kind of solution to this that you think maybe we would see the situation at Calais relieved, and possibly those people who are there now trying to get to Britain find a decent home?
Well, I think that as a continent, as a country, we should be doing more a very small number by comparison try to get to Europe. The vast majority, about 80% of refugees, are accommodated by the poorer countries of the world, the developing countries. Lebanon, for example, houses 1.2 million Syrian refugees, and they've only got a total population of 4.5 million. So you can imagine the impact it has on them. But you know, we have only got a few tens of thousands of refugees living in this country, which I don't think has any impact really on our population and standard of living. We should be doing more. And I remember from stories I've written that in the 1930s, we had children coming here on the Kinder transport, mostly Jewish refugee children who were escaping certain death by the Nazi regime. And before the war started, some thousands of children were allowed to get a train unaccompanied because the Nazi regime wouldn't allow them to come with adults. And they arrived in this country, and each one had to be sponsored to the tune of £50, which in the late 1930s was a lot of money. And ordinary families took them in. And I just wonder where that sort of traditional British value is at the moment. I think that I'm sure that there were people in the 1930s who decried refugees coming here. But then when I'm reminded of that story of the Kinder transport and the children coming here unaccompanied and being looked after, and when I look at the newspapers today, about the children coming here who are from war-torn countries who've had to leave their parents behind, it doesn't seem to be the same amount of empathy. And I think we should reconsider and look at ourselves about that. You can go and see my work on my profile website, which is at eyesears.com, eyesears.com.
Keep your eyes and ears open. Thanks very much, John Dantzig, for joining us on Dialect today.
Thank you.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk. UK.